Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley, 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is Dr. Howard Schlossberg. He's a board-certified medical oncologist and hematologist with New York Oncology Hematology. He's a member of their clinical research committee, as well as serving on the Ellis Hospital Institutional Review Board and the Schenectady County Public Health Advisory Committee. He can answer all your cancer-related questions, including prevention, diagnosis, and treatment. Dr. Schlossberger earned his medical degree from Temple University, where he also completed his residency. He completed a fellowship in hematology and medical oncology at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia. Dr. Schlossberg, can I call you Howard?
Absolutely.
Thanks for being here. Love to have you. It's so great. What do you do? I mean, what exactly do you do?
I talk to people.
About what?
About what they come in with. We discuss their problems, things we can do to help them out. Sometimes help them through some difficult decisions, and sometimes easier situations too.
Well, what kind of diseases do you specialize in?
The half of the job is blood type stuff, and the other half of the job is cancer.
So when somebody comes, I just read something today in the Berkshire Eagle of all places on the health page, Ask the Doctor column, and they said there's a new major study showing that an 81 milligram aspirin can absolutely help, according to the epidemiological study that they did, with cancer, especially among older people. Am I telling you something you hadn't heard?
This is something that has been talked about for a while, especially with colon cancer prevention.
Uh-huh.
They've been doing smaller studies and now bigger studies to try to find out ways we can help prevent the disease, and then we don't even need to worry about treating it if you don't ever get it.
Well, it's an amazing profession that you're in, because I think that's where we're going to see a lot of things. Do you ever look for genes?
Every day, yes.
How does that work?
In a couple of ways. One is with risk. Many people have heard of the BRCA genes that are for breast and ovarian cancer risk. There's a bunch of other genes that can lead to having cancer down the line. And then once somebody has cancer is a disease where the cells are mutated and broken. And if you have a drug that can target a particular mutation, you might be able to kill that cell and not touch the other cells around it.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. By the end of this show, there will be no phones that are not ringing. And so I'm just telling you, and I always tell people, get in the beginning. They don't call up later on and say, oh, you terrible little man, you didn't answer my phone call. Yeah, so there it is. I'm telling you now, 1-800-348-2551. Well, Dr. Schlossberg, here is the question. What about things like leukemia? Are those things that you look for also?
Yes. That is a kind of a combination between blood and solid tumors. Leukemia is a cancer of the blood, and it'll oftentimes show up just in a routine blood test.
What are the symptoms of leukemia? We're now playing Alan the hypochondriac game.
Yeah. So leukemia is a disease where you make too many of one kind of white blood cell. An immature white cell breaks and starts reproducing more than it should, and that squeezes out all the normal cells in the bone marrow. So you might have trouble with bleeding. You might have anemia.
What do you mean bleeding?
There's a kind of thing in your blood called platelets, and those help your blood clot.
Yeah.
If you squeeze the production of that out, you won't make enough, and then you can bleed.
Where would you bleed?
It could be anywhere. Nose, eyes, mouth.
Really?
Even your skin can just start bruising all of a sudden.
Wow. And what other major diseases besides leukemia do you look for?
We look for everything from skin cancer at the top of your head to melanoma on the bottom of your feet and everything in between.
Wow. Let's talk to Jim from Matamoros, our old friend Jim. Okay, Jim, what do you got?
Could you speak about the Hall's Jolly bodies and Heinz bodies and different diseases associated with them?
So Hunt's bodies and Hall's, whatever.
I think he means Heinz bodies and Howell Jolly bodies. Is that right, sir?
Yeah.
So those are things that appear typically in red blood cells, sometimes after your spleen has either been taken out or has stopped working. So it can be a marker of that. But typically it's not something we look for to diagnose a specific disease. It's a marker of something else that's happened.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Jim from Matamoros. Okay, we'll go to Charlie from Hatfield. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Charlie, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. About 34 years ago, my son had a blood condition called ITP, and we brought him to Children's Hospital, and it was a rare condition, and a blood specialist flew in from Colorado to treat him. Ultimately, after bone marrow studies were done, he was treated with a cortisone, I think prednisone. And I'm calling to know a little bit more about ITP, and secondly, whether that's can be transferred to his children.
Sure. So ITP stands for, back in the day, idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura. Now we just call it immune thrombocytopenia, meaning your immune system is taking out your thrombocytes, which are the platelets. So the best way to understand it is that your body becomes allergic to your platelets and it tries to get rid of them. Platelets prevent the blood from clotting like we discussed, so if you don't have enough, that can lead to bleeding. The steroids that they gave decrease immune system function so that allergic reaction slows down and hopefully the platelets that he's making can come back. So it's something that kind of happens on its own. We're not always sure what triggers it, just like any other kind of allergic reaction, but it's not likely to be something passed on to his kids.
Isn't that what idiopathic means? We don't know.
That's exactly right, but it sounds much fancier.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay, thanks, Charlie. Let's go to Estelle in Clifton Park. Okay, Estelle, you're on.
Thank you. Doctor, I'm calling about Revlimid and its effectiveness in treating myelodysplasia.
So Revlimid is a drug that is used for myelodysplasia, or MDS, and also for a disease called multiple myeloma, another blood cancer. It works the best in people who have a specific mutation called a 5q-, but it has been shown to have some benefit to patients without that. So it's with myelodysplasia, you never really know how well something will work until you give it a chance for a while, but it does help some people, yes.
Okay, and how long before you would notice effects, because obviously blood transfusions in the meantime.
Sure. Unfortunately, most of the myelodysplasia treatments, it can be months before you know whether something's working or not. So you might need to go through months of transfusions, and then hopefully they slow down because it's working, or you kind of say, you know, I guess this isn't it.
And Doc, why do you use the word dysplasia?
Dysplasia means basically funny looking. If you look inside the bone marrow, the cells are being generated, but the ones that are being generated are not coming out right. So it's not a cancer that's going
to
grow. And
it's on the way to cancer.
It can be, but it could be a separate, yep.
Interesting. Estelle, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Bonnie in Niskayuna. Okay, Bonnie, you're on.
Hello. My question is, my mom has had chronically low iron levels for several years. She also has a history of pernicious anemia, and they've recently sent her to an oncologist to try to deal with the iron levels. She thinks they're planning to give her iron shots and then monitor that to see what is going on with the levels. What type of treatment would be possible for this problem?
It sounds like they're doing the right thing. Pernicious anemia is a disease where you don't absorb enough vitamin B12 or folic acid, and it suggests that there could also be something going on with the absorption of iron. So if pills aren't doing the job, you just bypass the whole gut and stick it right in the vein. So that is the appropriate treatment for it.
And that would be, if that resolves the problem, that would be an ongoing treatment?
Correct. Part of the thing you have to do is make sure you're not losing it from something, say, a colon mass or something like that. But if it's just an absorption problem, you can just replace it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Bonnie. You're listening to Dr. Howard Schlossberg, board-certified medical oncologist and hematologist. Okay, what we're going to do is take a very short break, a couple of seconds, and then we'll be right back.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine, providing options, support, and help for surgical weight loss at the Ellis Bariatric Care Center in Schenectady. ellismedicine.org. Nathan Littower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, proudly introducing the gastroenterologist specialist of Littower, working to help put patients at ease with colonoscopies for over 100 years, nlh.org. And from the Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Waterbury Avenue, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals, honestweight.coop. Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the Capital Region and beyond, marketing creative and business ideas since 1996. imediaconsult.com. And from the Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org.
And thank you, Zachary, for bringing us back. Let's go to David in East Chatham. Okay, David, you're on.
Hi, thanks a lot. I guess a two-part question, sort of. One, my father had prostate cancer. He's still living, I guess, about 5 years ago. My mother just passed away from pancreatic cancer, very much out of left field, 3 months from diagnosis to her passing away. The generic question is, what can I do as a healthy, non-smoking, non-drinking 45-year-old male to protect myself with that sort of genetic history? And secondly, pancreatic cancer, is there a test, a precursor, something that you can look for, or is it just when you start feeling symptoms and, you know, that sort of soreness in your back kind of thing?
Well, I'll try to remember all those questions and get them all out to you. The first part is, I'm going to presume your parents were in their 60s. And
yes, both.
Okay, neither of those diseases is tremendously unusual at that time. Prostate cancer especially, pretty much all of us guys are going to get it if you wait long enough. The pancreas is a little less common, but it's not typically genetic. So unless you told me you had lots of other first-degree relatives having unusually young cancers, I'd probably say do your usual screening, which is colonoscopies, rectal exams. There's debate about PSA, but with your family history, probably not a bad idea. And okay. The second part of the question, I have already forgotten. What was that?
Is there a test
for
pancreatic cancer?
They are working on that. They're looking into things like circulating tumor cells in the blood. There is a marker called CA19-9 we sometimes use to track cancer treatment. It's not very good as a screening test, but you might see some talk about that. But right now, unfortunately, no, we don't have anything reliable.
And I've heard that the reason that pancreatic is so hard to find is that the pancreas is not in a great place in the body to show.
That's right. It has to. A tumor would have to press on something for you to know it's there, and the pancreas is kind of just surrounded by guts and fat, so you wouldn't typically feel it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
tough disease,
it.
Tough disease, sir.
You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice, got it. And she's still alive many years later, and apparently had the Whipple maneuver or whatever they call that in the beginning. And I've heard that if you get pancreatic and you can catch it early enough, you have a much better chance than usually, because it usually progresses before you know it's there.
That's correct, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to Dick in Longmeadow. Okay, Dick, you're on.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Just a couple of questions. Regarding the new immuno-oncology products that Bristol-Myers and Merck have, we saw former President Carter get a dose of one of their products for a metastatic. He had a melanoma in the brain after that, and they went away. Now, I'm just wondering how do you feel about it as a mainstay treatment for cancer? Is this just something that's coming, or is it going to be something that's going to be used routinely?
I'll answer that in a couple of ways. One is those drugs, which are the immunomodulator or checkpoint inhibitors, have been approved for a couple of diseases and are being approved for more. We do think it's important. In fact, my practice thinks it is so important that we're participating in a massive clinical trial called CheckMate. We're actually one of the only places in the world that's part of this study where patients with advanced lung cancer will be able to get these drugs earlier in the regular pathway. Right now, they're used mostly after regular treatments have failed, and we are hopeful that bringing them on up front will allow people to benefit even more from them.
So you feel there is a future for them?
Absolutely. It looks very promising.
Right. And lung is a tough one, right? Because, you know, the survival rate is not that great, right, Doctor?
Sadly, right.
Yeah. Okay, Dick from Longmeadow, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's go to Sandra in Pittsfield. Sandra.
Oh, hi. I have another melanoma question. In reference to that, I have a condition called common variable immune deficiency, and I get immunoglobulins every 3 weeks intravenously. But I was diagnosed with a melanoma 3 years ago, and I had just been to the skin doctor, and it appeared within 2 months of my having been to the skin doctor. It just, I guess, came out of nowhere. So my question is this. Given the common variable immune deficiency, is there any other tests that I should be having other than going to the skin doctor, which I go to the skin doctor every 4 months or 4 to 6 months now? Is there anything else I can do to, you know, find out if something like this might be happening and just taking me by surprise like it did before?
Great question.
It sounds like you are doing the right thing by keeping an eye on it, and I presume you're also being cautious, avoiding the sun and doing all that
kind of
thing?
Yes. I'm a salamander. I never go in the sun without sunscreen and a hat. But the thing about it is that I worry because of my immune deficiency. I have low IgG, IgA, and IgM, and I'm just wondering, is there anything else I can do, you know, in a preventative kind of a way to make sure that this one came on so fast. Like I said, I had just been to the skin doctor 2 months before.
And sometimes they can move quickly. Typically, it is not that fast. So I think your current regimen seems to make sense. And by replacing those immunoglobulins, hopefully you will have a better immune system to help protect you. But absolutely keep an eye on things. If anything looks out of whack, let your doctor know.
Okay, and one other quick question. When I get my blood work checked, I sometimes have immature granulocytes. Is that anything to worry about?
Not as long as you don't have too many. It's typical to have at least some in the blood.
What is that?
Okay.
Those are early forms of a white blood cell called neutrophils, that are the first line of defense against infection.
Okay. Well, Sandra, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Yep, thank you very much.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Patrick in Pittsfield. Okay, Patrick, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. Just one question. Just in general, when a patient goes in for just regular old blood work, if there was unknown cancer somewhere in them, how likely would it be to just show up on just a regular blood test?
Unfortunately, not tremendously likely. If, for example, your liver numbers are all out of whack, that might give someone reason to check it out. If your blood counts are very off. But in general, they're mostly looking for your metabolic systems and things like that, and your regular tumor screenings, such as colonoscopies, pap smears, mammogram. Well, not for you, but for other folks, that's the most important thing.
I see. So you have to get closer to the organ to really see.
Depends what it is, yes. But the blood test can help see some things.
Do we see more comprehensive blood tests coming? I mean, I think Tim's question is excellent. So is there a point at which people who go and, you know, get regular panel get more things included?
I think down the line, once they have it sorted out, they will draw blood and they will run it through a machine to see if there's any circulating tumor cells. And I think that will be a wonderful screening technique once they get that working. And that is being worked on.
So if that happens, how long, Doc, can we expect to live?
Well, then your brain wears out if your body doesn't.
1-800-348-2551. Let's see here. Aresta in Dover Plains. Okay, that's number two? It looks like a two. Okay, let's try two.
Hello?
Hello.
This is Aresta.
Okay, good.
So here's my question. What is your opinion about the immunotherapy of T cells for advanced prostate cancer, and what are the side effects?
So we've been... That is a treatment called Cipulocel, is what I think.
No, it's Prostavac or Provac or something like that.
Are you talking about Provenge?
Yes, Provenge.
Cipulocel is the other name.
It's Provenge.
That is a very promising technique. It has sort of been superseded by some of the newer prostate techniques. That is mostly for someone who has advanced disease but no symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it doesn't meet the criteria for everyone, but it's definitely part of the plan.
So are you a PSA fan, Doc, or not?
I think that the more information you have, the better.
Yeah.
Now, what are the side effects of that study?
So it's a logistically kind of challenging, where they pull your cells out and then they work on them in the lab and have to infuse them back in.
Yes, that I know. My friend had it, but I'm wondering about the side effects, because they have never told him about the side effects, and he had so many, and now he has bone cancer.
Typically, I'm not sure that would necessarily be connected. What it could mean, though, is that unfortunately it did not work, and it is the prostate cancer in the bones.
Oh.
Arista, thank you for calling. Appreciate
thank
it.
You,
okay,
Alan.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Tim in Saratoga. Is that you, Tim?
Yeah. I'm here.
Go.
I'm a 71-year-old, six-year survivor of prostate cancer. I had a Gleason score of 7. I had a PSA that was lower than 4. I was told I had a moderate, maybe 35% for a recurrence. My PSA is now down to 0 for all intents and purposes. I know some preventive maintenance techniques. I've lost weight. I watch my diet, use a heart diet. But I wondered if there's other things I can do preventive-wise, besides exercise and diet.
It sounds like you're doing the right thing. They've looked into selenium supplements. They've looked into vitamin E. Unfortunately, none of these have really panned out. But what you're doing now not only may prevent cancer prevention, progression, but will also help your heart and the rest of you, too. And may be more likely to harm you.
So, I'm
an Italian, so that's a concern. I do want to tell you this. I got bad advice once. I was taking salt palmetto for 14 years. I had a wonderful oncologist at St. Peter's, a German who was familiar with that.
No names, please.
I'm not going to give the name, Alan. He was a wonderful doctor, and he knew about salt palmetto because he was German. That's where it was perfected. And he said that if I had not taken that salt palmetto, I probably would have been diagnosed much earlier, because it masked the symptoms of prostate cancer. And indeed, I was diagnosed with a 3.7 PSA. The doctor didn't want to put me through a biopsy, but he thought that it was the wise thing to do. He didn't think I had cancer, and it turned out to be cancer. I think he saved my life, and I would fight for a PSA and digital exams if I had to. And I'm sorry, I've taken too much time.
Oh, okay. Well, Tim, that's good, but you make a very good point. Howard, why don't you give us a why don't you tell us
my treatment?
Yeah.
Forgot to tell you my treatment.
Well, no. Don't tell us that. Don't tell us that, because the first part of it was really interesting. Can you take over-the-counter drugs that may, in fact, inhibit finding the cancers?
We're not sure. Some of the studies of those supplements showed that they did decrease the risk of developing it, but when it did come on, it was a nastier variety.
Interesting.
So the jury is still out. Is there a benefit in the end, or are you better off skipping it?
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Well, I should say that I had the external beam radiation and an implant of radiated seed. They feel that I'm a poster boy for the procedure, knock on wood so far. I was supposed to make 10 years or more, and I'm hoping that comes true.
Terrific. Great news, Tim. Thank you for calling. Appreciate
it. And say hello to the lovely Roselle. I'm one of her classmates.
I will indeed. Thank you,
so
Tim.
Long.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
More people know Roselle than me. Let's go to Patty from Albany. Patty, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a question at the opposite end of the age here. My 27-year-old son was diagnosed and is being treated with testicular cancer. We had thought, we had hoped that we caught it early. The tumor was very, very small, and his tumor markers were always normal. After surgery, a scan revealed that it had already spread, well, that his lymph nodes, retroperitoneal lymph nodes, were enlarged. They were about 3 times the normal size. And the oncologist, 2 different oncologists treating my son, have always been stymied by the fact that his tumor markers have remained normal, yet the cancer is so aggressive. It's a non-seminoma, and obviously they're thinking that that's what's in the lymph nodes. I was wondering if the doctor had any opinion about that, thoughts about that, or experience.
Well, that actually makes sense. It sounds like your son, unfortunately, has a pretty nasty tumor, and a cancer cell, remember, is a regular cell that has broken, and the
right.
further it gets away from being its a normal testicle cell, the nastier cancer can be. So if it has progressed beyond that, and now it's just a bizarre tumor cell, it may not be making all of the regular substances that a testicle cell should be making. And that kind of fits why it's acting more aggressively than usual and not showing those markers, because it's really gotten far away from where it started.
Okay. All righty. So you think after, because they're willing to do a repeat CAT scan after 2 rounds of the 4 rounds of etoposide and cisplatin to see if the lymph nodes have budged at all, thinking that if they're getting bigger, we could be using the wrong chemo. If they're getting smaller, then we're right on target. That makes sense.
Absolutely, because you can't track it with the blood, so the only way is to look at it, and that makes sense.
Patty, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Audrey of Hudson. Okay, Audrey, you're on.
Hi, I wanted to ask the doctor, excuse my hoarseness, I wanted to ask the doctor about a diagnosis that I've been trying to get since March. In February, I had 110, my regular blood pressure. In March, I had a headache for 45 days and went to the emergency room finally with, you know, sweats and this horrible headache, and my blood pressure was 219 over 109. And then immediately they sent me to a cardiologist, and he started trying to find out what was wrong. He did all kinds of scans. I had 5 high-5 HIAAs in 2 tests, and in 2 tests not. He sent me to an oncologist. I mean, no, he never sent me to an oncologist. I'm being treated by an endocrinologist now. I have an empty cella. They said that's nothing. I've had brain scans. I've had all kinds of scans. So the next thing that they're wanting me to do is a colonoscopy, and then something that I have never heard of called an OCTRA scan to look for neuroendocrine tissue, because they're suspecting some kind of a tumor, but they have no idea where it is. I'm wondering if I shouldn't just see an oncologist.
It sounds like they're going down the right pathway. 2 diseases pop into my head. One is called pheochromocytoma, which is incredibly rare.
Yeah, they said it's not a pheo.
Okay. Then carcinoid might be the other one.
Carcinoid is the one they're looking for now.
Right. And for that, the octreotide scan makes sense. That looks for carcinoid. And if you have just one, it might even be something they can take out. So if usually the oncologist only comes in if it is something that can't be removed and you need to suppress it with medicines. So it sounds like they're going down the right path.
Good luck, Audrey.
What's the name of that scan? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Octreotide scan.
Octreo. Is that a whole body scan?
Yes.
And is it radiation?
Yes.
It is. Because she already said she's worried because I've had so much radiation.
I've had so many scans. It might be the only way to diagnose you. So, yeah, there's always risk and benefit with any imaging study, but you got to think about it sometimes.
Thank you, Audrey.
All right. Thank you very much.
Right. We're going to take a very short break. Then we'll be able to come back and finish up with a lot of calls in the last and final part of the program.
Support comes from Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road, Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com. Nine Pin Cider, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Saturday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple, ninepincider.com. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design, and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades, shannonrose.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks, and from Utica College, working to help solve the college affordability issue with its tuition reset initiative, utica.edu/affordable.
We're back, and here we are once again. Welcome back, everybody, and we're in the third and final part of the show with Dr. Howard Schlossberg, board-certified medical oncologist and hematologist with New York Oncology Hematology. Okay, so let's go to Pat in Belchertown. I guess it's Belchertown. Pat?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
My question is about bladder cancer. In 2003, they found a tumor in my bladder, and they removed it. And in 2004, they found another one. I was going every 3 months to get tested. And they found another one and removed it. I have not had one since. I chose not to do the biotherapy, which is common in bladder cancer. But I still go for checkups, where they go up through the urethra and look in the bladder. I was just wondering how many years before you can feel free from bladder cancer?
There's no official cutoff on that, but typically with any malignancy, if you go 5 years without having a recurrence, we let our guard down a little bit. So it sounds like you said 2004?
Right, and I do still go every 2 years now. It was every 3 months and every 6 months, et cetera. Now I go every 2 years to have it checked. But every time I go, he says, well, you know, this is kind of cancer that can come back any time, so you really need to continue to get checked.
That does make sense. It's been, you know, a decade, but you had multiple occurrences already, so it makes sense to keep an eye on it.
Pat, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, we'll go to 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Lots of free phones. Let's go to Bill in New Paltz. Bill, you're on.
Hi, I had a quick question to ask about Revlimid. I have been taking it as a long-term medication for multiple myeloma. I had a bone marrow transplant that didn't produce remission. But the Revlimid seems to keep my count at a very low level. So I just didn't know how long this is good for and if there are any other maintenance, because I know it's not curable, maintenance treatments for multiple myeloma.
I will answer that backwards for you. There's a bunch of maintenance treatments, but I wouldn't change a thing if it is keeping it under control and you're tolerating it well. I have some patients who've been on it for longer than I can even remember, and as long as their numbers stay good and they feel well, the usual recommendation is to keep them on it.
What is it, Doc?
Revlimid is it's a myeloma drug, kills myeloma cells, and at the low sort of maintenance dose, even if you've got a couple cells brewing up in the bone marrow, it keeps them suppressed so they don't break out and cause you trouble.
So some people get confused between melanoma and myeloma. One's on the skin, right?
Yep.
The melanoma, and then the myeloma is within the bones.
Correct. There's a cell called a plasma cell. It's the white blood cell that makes antibodies.
Yep.
That's what gets in trouble in myeloma.
Okay. Bill, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to BR in Springfield. BR, is that you?
Yes. It is
okay.
I.
Okay, go.
I have a comment and then a question.
Oh.
Two of my children have had cancer, both of whom were in their, I'm going to say, mid-40s. David, 6 years ago next week, brain cancer, treated at Albany Medical Center. Fabulous. He's doing really well, no deficits. Anyhow, but my daughter was diagnosed with thyroid cancer a year ago this fall. She was 46. No symptoms, and it was caught purely by chance. She had gone to urgent care for something. They ruled out heart stuff because of family history. That's probably what they were looking at first. And then they did a body scan and caught her throat. They didn't mean to, but whatever, and then they called her a day or two later and said, Jennifer, we see something that doesn't belong there. So they had her come in, they did a biopsy, said, yeah, they thought it was early, and in fact, when she went to the endocrinologist, he said it was already stage three and had spread a little bit. She had no symptoms. She had been to her internist. They had done the, you know, palpating the throat and everything. What are the symptoms of thyroid cancer? She's doing okay. She's had, whatever, and being watched very carefully. But what are the symptoms?
So that's a tough one, because just like you say, if you don't find it pressing on it for a lump or a mass, you may not know anything. Sometimes mm-hmm. it can change the hormones it's producing and rev things up or really slow things down. But much of the time, it's purely a physical effect and can sometimes be hard to find.
Mm. Well, she was very fortunate because the doc had said that if it were stage four, it might be in her bones and lungs.
Right, could be a different story.
So anyhow, I could become a believer. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you. You got it.
Bye.
You know, many of us, Howard, are on, thyroid medication of one kind or another. How do you know when it's cancer, when it's just an underperforming thyroid?
If, as part of the workup, they'll often do an ultrasound or some other test to look at the thyroid. If there's no lumps, typically it's not malignancy.
Right. Okay, well, that's good to know. Let's go to, we did that one already. Let's go to Barbara in Niskayuna. Okay, Barbara, you're on.
Okay. I have a question. I recently had a low white blood count of 2.5 and was sent to a hematologist oncologist. A few weeks later, I had a test done, and my level was 4.9, and all the neutrophils, et cetera, were in the right proportions. My question is, and I'm going to be monitored every 6 months, but my question is, I've been a regular blood donor, and I wonder if there's any reason why I should discontinue doing that?
I don't think so. If you had some virus or some other disease that was causing your count to go down, it wouldn't typically go back to normal. Also, as part of the blood receivers, they do test the blood for viruses and other dangerous things. As long as you're feeling fine and everything looks okay, thanks for donating.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There you go. All right. We'll go to James in Highland. James.
Good afternoon, Alan.
You're on.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Alan. How are you?
Well, I'm good. But more important is, how's everybody else and how are you?
I'm doing extremely well. I'm going to get a little bit of snow now, but we're going to get through it. So I have a question for the doctor. And my question is, I heard this morning on one of your programs, somebody was talking about a doctor in the early 1900s that used to treat certain types of cancer with, I believe it was a step infection, where he would purposely get the patient infected and the infection itself would kill the cancer.
I'm not familiar with that particular technique, although it's interesting you say that. There's a number of research trials right now using viruses to destroy tumor cells. So it's an idea that I guess has been around with us longer than I knew.
And I guess after he passed away in like the 1930s, nobody really picked up his work where he left off to look into it. And I believe his daughter has continued the research. But, I found that quite interesting, where he would actually purposely infect these patients with this step infection. I believe that's the term that they used. And it actually ate and killed the cancer.
Interesting.
Cool. Thanks, James. 1-800-348-2551. Lots of free phones right now. 1-800-348-2551. John in Saratoga. John, you're on.
Hey, two doctors on a Monday.
Yeah, well, you know what my mother-in-law said.
What's that?
You're a phooey doctor.
I have a sister that lives in Florida. And she's 80, 81. Anyway, it was uncovered that there were a few cysts on her pancreas. She went to the Florida hospital. They're supposed to be pretty thorough up there. And they discovered a third cyst. Now, they're claiming, or they're not claiming anything, but the location of the cysts on the pancreas, from what reading we have heard, can most likely develop into tumors. Is there any area of the cancer, and can it be taken care of? Do you just have to watch the growth of these cysts, or will these cysts eventually turn into a tumor?
It could be a totally benign process that can just be followed. Typically, the scary pancreas cancers are solid masses, so I would be more worried about that. But it definitely sounds like something that an eye should be kept on.
And how does that? And how does that show up? You do it in a scan, or
exactly?
Yeah, and you can tell the difference on a scan between a cyst and a tumor.
Yep.
You know. Well, John,
it was addition. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, I'm glad you asked that question. It's one that has occurred to me from time to time.
Yeah. Well, the interesting part of it was noticed on an MRI, and then they did, which surprised me, an endoscopy type of procedure where they were exploring the pancreas by apparently moving whatever was in the way, and then they discovered the third one. And so she's going back again in this May coming. It was a year. They actually gave her a full year before we want to see you again.
Okay.
So they didn't see. There didn't seem to be anything. They're concerned, obviously, but you know, I don't know if there's any research that can destroy those cysts or like a laser thing. Is there anything on the horizon there?
Well, the most important thing is if it's nothing to get worried about, I'd mostly just leave it alone. Every procedure has side effects, so if they're benign, just leave them be.
John, I'm going to let you go. Thank you, and let's go to Pat in Cambridge. Pat, you're on.
Oh, hello, folks. This is a swell show. Thanks very much for having me. I'm learning a lot. I don't have any direct questions, but I would like to hear the doctor discuss targeted cancer treatment. Is this just an experimental stage? Is it being done? And educate us about that. Okay, I'll hang up now.
No, don't hang up. You may have another question. Go ahead.
Okay.
So the classical cancer therapy is cytotoxic or cell-killing chemotherapy. That's what most people think about. It makes your hair fall out, throw up, and such, because all that does is kill rapidly dividing cells.
Right.
And some of that is tumor cells, but many of them are not. The targeted therapies you're referring to are very much part of practice. I can think of a half dozen or more off the top of my head, and they're always the first choice if someone has that particular target. One of the first ones was a pill called Gleevec that came out, it's got to be 10, 15 years ago. And all that does is it blocks a single mutation called the Philadelphia chromosome, and that totally changed the treatment of people with a disease called CML. We have targeted treatments for lung cancer, melanoma, kidney cancer, colon cancer. Yes, exactly, breast, that you probably have heard of, Herceptin and things like that. So it is absolutely part of the stuff we use.
I'm still confused a little bit, of course. I have a relative that was just diagnosed with breast cancer, had a mastectomy, and she's waiting to find out if she's going to have chemo, and I don't hear any discussion about targeted.
Is always part of the plan. They'll be looking at hormone receptors, estrogen and progesterone, and they'll be looking at something called HER2, which is a protein on the surface of the cells, and the presence or absence of those will determine if they get drugs to hit either of those two abnormalities.
Okay.
Thanks, Pat. Okay, let's go to Barbara in Hanover. Barbara, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Barbara. Go.
Hi, I'm calling with a question about lupus anticoagulant. I'm in my 60s, was recently discovered to have had that. Other than major surgery, do I need to be worried about anything else with this condition? Bruising, minor surgery, dental surgery, and the like.
So lupus anticoagulant is a terrible name because it's neither lupus nor an anticoagulant. It's an antibody in the blood that actually makes you more likely to clot. So that's why they talk about surgery, because after surgery, if you're flat in your back for a while and are immobile, you may be at risk for having a clot. Same with a long plane ride or a long, long car ride. You want to make sure you're up and moving around, keeping the blood moving. But for dental work and stuff like that, I wouldn't worry about it. The anticoagulant, which makes you think it's something that'll make you bleed, is actually just part of a bad name.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's go to, does that look like a two to you?
It's a two.
Okay, no, that can't be a two because there's three. Okay.
Carolyn is three.
Number three. Okay, Carolyn is number three. Carolyn, you're on.
Oh, hi. Great show. Questions about beta use of beta glucans, beta 1,3-D glucan, or beta 1,6 glucans in a mushroom extract that's been used in cancer to help reduce the size of tumors. It also helps inhibit the growth of tumors. And also IP6, which is an inositol hexaphosphate, which is a powerful anti-cancer, has anti-cancer properties and natural killer cell activity. Have you heard of studies that have shown some help from this? Because I got rid of a lump in my own breast with the use of it, and I don't know to this day whether it was actually cancerous.
Well, the first thing I would say is I'm certainly glad you got better. That's the most important thing, however you did it.
Yeah.
The beta glucans I'm not familiar with. IP6, I've had a couple patients ask about. I've looked into it. Yeah, there's definitely some interesting mechanisms and whatnot, but unfortunately it hasn't really been conclusively proven to the point that I'm comfortable recommending it.
In this country?
In general.
In general. Not the German commissioning?
Again, I'm not familiar with exactly what's licensed over there.
They're like the FDA over here, but they're in Germany.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your input.
Bye. So now we are with Denise in Rhinebeck. Okay, Denise, go.
Hi. I have a question for the doctor regarding myelodysplasia. I was wondering if there is a genetic predisposition for the disease.
Not typically, no. We're not sure of all the reasons why it happens, but it doesn't typically trend in families.
What is it?
So myelodysplasia is a bone marrow disease where you're making plenty of cells, but they are not great quality cells. They don't live very long, so your numbers go down in the blood.
So it's the old dysplasia thing on the way to cancer,
exactly.
But not there. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. And we'll go to Wendy in Newburgh. Wendy, you're on. You're on, Wendy.
Hi. I had papillary thyroid cancer in 2012, had surgery, radioactive iodine. I had a recurrence in 2015. I had the state, which was in the central lymph nodes, and they removed those, and I had the radioactive iodine again. And I'm just calling to find out, is there anything I can do to strengthen my immune system or to try to stave off another recurrence? I know that this frequently recurs.
Basically monitoring as you're doing and in general keeping yourself healthy. You know, eat right, exercise, all the basic stuff that actually has been shown to help.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. It's got to be really fast. Patricia in Kingston. We're almost out of time, Patricia. Go ahead.
Yes, doctor, is there any downside to having MRIs?
Not as far as we know. No radiation. As long as you're not allergic to the contrast dye, you're good to go.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, and metal. If there's any metal in you, that could be yanked out by the magnet. But
yeah.
Physically, no.
Isn't that interesting? I've always thought the reverse. I'm glad you're here today, doc. That's great. Appreciate it. Okay. We are just about out of time. I want to apologize to Wes in Niskayuna. Of course, I couldn't get to him and Wendy in Newburgh. Maybe we already talked to Wendy in Newburgh. Anyway, thank you. I'd like to thank Dr. Howard Schlossberg. His wonderful family is here with us today, and including Fiona and Rachel, his wonderful daughters, his wonderful wife. They're all here today. Underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from the Urological Institute, offering urologic oncology services with prostate specialists using active monitoring protocols designed to help avoid or postpone cancer treatments through imaging and genomic testing, urologyoncology.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incredible Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.